Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Here to take your calls, Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. The number to call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell with extensive experience in both conventional and not-so-conventional veterinary medicine. Dr. Scharf, welcome back to the show. How are you, Ron?
Thanks a lot, Ray. I'm great. Thanks for such a great welcome, as usual. Hi, everybody.
Hello there. And, once again, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. So summer is, it feels like it's here, if it's not officially here yet. And that means ticks and everything else, right?
That means ticks and everything else. But I'll tell you, with the suppressive heat and humidity that we've had in the last few days, I'm thinking more about exposure. I'm thinking more about leaving your dog out too long, especially if they're being exercised. They need plenty of water, plenty of water. And you can't expect them to be able to regulate their body temperature with just a little bit of shade. I wouldn't leave dogs out in this kind of weather for long without them being able to cool off and rehydrate. Just something to keep in mind. The ticks, yeah, absolutely. The ticks are definitely this time of year. I don't know that I've seen all the landslide of ticks that were predicted as a result of having had such a mild winter. I think that they're normal. I don't know what you would call it, but I'll tell you one thing. 2 days ago, I got my own tick on myself.
Oh, boy.
And it's the first time I've been dealing with ticks in my profession for 26 years now, and I think that this is the first time I've ever seen my own self, my own body with a tick on it, and it was on my own property. And my kennel person actually found it. She said, move your head to the side, and she pulled this tick off my neck.
Oh, you didn't feel the bite?
No, you don't feel the bite.
Mm. Okay. Well, maybe you at home can share your tick stories. It's Roxanne in Schenectady. Roxanne, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
My question concerns ear infections in cats. My poor cat has somewhat chronic ear infections, and it's mostly due to allergies, from what I understand. I guess there could be like an anatomical component to it, also like a small ear canal. And I was just wondering your opinion of things like Pelotol and Animex. She is receiving treatment at the vet, and it seems like when they administered the Animax, she became very sick afterwards, and then she won't let me administer it, so then we went with the Pelotol, and I have to go back for part two of the Pelotol. It's just a continuing problem. I was wondering if you had any suggestions or if there's something else I might not know about.
So, Roxanne, ear infections, especially those secondary to allergies, are very common and very frustrating because they just keep on happening. If it is true that it's due to your cat's allergies, then first thing I would want to know, Roxanne, is shall I assume that it's worse in the spring and the fall?
Well, you know, she has food allergies, and I mistakenly gave her some food with that had fish in it, which is her main allergen. I don't know her secondary allergens. I haven't noticed any big difference in the spring versus other times of year. It's possible.
Well, that's good, because it's much easier to avoid food ingredients that your animal's allergic to than to avoid inhalant allergies that they're breathing in during the typical allergy season. What you need to do is find out what she's allergic to food-wise and avoid it, Roxanne. And if you do that, you might be able to avoid the infections in her ears. The way that you could find out what ingredients food-wise that she's allergic to is either a trial and error thing, or more gratifying than that would be a blood test that actually tests for the most common food ingredients that an animal could be allergic to, and then going with those hypoallergenic foods that will avoid those ingredients. Now, bear in mind, Roxanne, a hypoallergenic food trial, in other words, trying out a food to see whether or not your pet's allergic, requires two strict things. Number one, that they be on it for at least 2 or 3 months. And number two, that they can't cheat with even one bite, so much as one bite of any other ingredient, or else you just invalidated the food trial and you won't know how to interpret the lack of a response.
So blood test is more efficient and
blood
quicker.
Blood test is more
efficient.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you think Pelotol is an effective treatment?
Well, I have to say, Roxanne, that I was surprised to even hear the word. Because the last I heard, Pelotol was an old-school remedy made by the old Pittman Moore Company, and I'm talking 20, 25 years ago. And when it went unavailable, I stockpiled like 12 of them. I had a dozen, and I kept them for years and years and ended up never using them anyway. I think of the Pelotol as reserved for those situations, Roxanne, where I would have an animal that was totally refractory to being treated with a topical medication. You could stick that stuff in, keep it in for a couple of weeks, bring the animal back, sedate them, get it all out, and often it would have helped the problem. I didn't even realize that it was still available, Roxanne, so I have to say I haven't used it in a long time.
Okay.
It is, yeah, okay.
Roxanne, we got to move it along, but thank you very much for the call. Eileen, and go ahead.
If I could just make one last comment about these chronic ear problems, whether Roxanne's off the phone or not, is that oftentimes when someone's had a chronic ear problem, it's very availing to schedule a time to leave your pet at the vet on an empty stomach so they could be sedated and have their ears flushed out, cleaned out, and thoroughly examined, because most awake animals won't let you look in there with an otoscope, even if they don't have an infection, because you want to make sure, number one, that there's nothing in there that will not lend itself to being helped. In other words, a growth or a foreign body or a ruptured eardrum or whatever, it gives you the opportunity of getting rid of all that crud and making an exact diagnosis so you know what you're dealing with.
Very good. Eileen in Ulster County, you're on.
Yes, hello. I have a three-part question about dogs with diabetes. The first question is, do dogs generally get type 1 or type 2? My second question is what your experience has been with Humulin NPH versus the new Levemir insulin that costs twice as much. And my third part is about the cataracts that generally come on very quickly after a dog develops diabetes.
Eileen, those are all of them good questions. It's generally type 2. It's generally an insulin-dependent diabetes that you need to be providing the insulin, number one. Number two, the Humulin NPH versus the Levemir is an evolving question because we lost our access to a better product called Vetsulin. It was PZI, which was a longer-lasting insulin than the Humulin NPH. The Humulin NPH is a recombinant DNA product made for humans, and the NPH doesn't last that long. So a lot of these dogs have a peak activity of about 4 hours, which means even if you give it twice a day, they're still spending most of their day in a hyperglycemic state, and to give them more would risk putting them into a hypoglycemic state, which is dangerous.
Is the Levemir twice a day also?
Yes, the Levemir, I have to say, Eileen, I don't have a lot of experience because of the cost.
Oh, yeah.
And I
$155?
Yes. Well, my understanding is that it does last longer, yet I don't have a lot of experience because it's only in the last few years, recently, that the experts in the veterinary endocrinology are saying that if the NPH doesn't avail, if it's not working in an adequate way, then to try the Levemir. I've, in general, had the good fortune, Eileen, to have most of my diabetic dogs on the NPH do fairly decently. But as decently as they're doing, as perfectly as they're doing, as on top of it as you may be, doing a blood glucose curve twice a year to make sure that you have their right peak insulin activity, that gives you the best time of day to take their blood sample, to monitor that blood sugar, to make sure that they're on the right dose of the insulin, to do your fructosamines a couple times a year, which is what gives you an overall view of how their insulin control or the sugar control has been over the last several weeks. But even if you're as on top of it as all the books recommend being, it's not a guarantee that you're going to avoid the cataracts. And it's something that being as on top of the monitoring and as diligent as it sounds like you are, Eileen, you'll run the least risk of the cataracts, but I can't say that that risk is zero.
My friend did research and found bilberry helps with to avoid the cataracts in dogs. So I'm giving that to my dog. I don't know if you have any experience with that.
No, I've heard of bilberry, and that's the most I could tell you. I do know that several years ago, people were looking at chromium and other medications or dietary supplements, but I'm unaware of any ever having been proven, Eileen, to provide a healthful effect. I can't say that they don't exist, though.
And about how long do dogs live with diabetes? Like, what's the range?
Well, you could look at your statistics, Eileen, and they might say several years, but I'll tell you, I've had several diabetic dog patients of mine that have lasted years and years. So whatever the statistics say, it doesn't apply to your dog. How's that, Eileen?
Okay. Can I just make one more plug?
Absolutely.
For shelter dogs? I'm on my second diabetic dog now. She's actually in the hospital today getting her glucose curve. But a number of years ago, I had another one. She lived 3.5 years with diabetes. But what I want to say, I wanted to call this morning when they had the road rage stories.
Yeah.
Because people used to say to me that this dog was lucky that you kept her and gave her insulin. I would say, no, this little 25-pound dog saved me from road rage.
Oh, that's great.
Hey, Eileen, thanks a lot. We're going to take a break here. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's the Pets and Vet Show. 800-348-2551, the number. 800-348-2551. Back in a flash.
Support for WAMC comes from Hudson Valley Footwear, Rhinebeck, New York. Footwear for the family, including Walkie sandals, Aurora Shoe Company sandals, and Keen sandals for women and kids. HudsonValleyShoes.com. Audi Pro Musica, performing John Brown's Body, works from and about the Civil War, including Vaughn Williams, Dona Nobis Patchum, June 9th at MPEC, AlbanyProMusica.org. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm, snowfarm.org. Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, presenting River University, a 9-credit environmental undergraduate summer program, classes in Beacon and aboard the Clearwater, riveruniversity.com for online application. The Yiddish Book Center, Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring Unsay at 9:53, a photonovella exhibit by Ilan Stavins, Sunday through Friday, 10 to 4, yiddishbookcenter.org. And Curtis Lumber, supporting the Pet Connection and local animal rescues, helping to bring pets and people together, curtislumber.com.
You know, on Monday morning at 6 a.m., the fun drive begins, and we hope you are with us at that time. It'll be our summer drive. Starts Monday at 6 a.m. Now, if you're part of that subset that really isn't crazy about the fun drive, some people call, believe it, it is true, and love the fun drive. They love it. If you're not so crazy about it, the best thing to do is go to WAMC.org and make a pledge now. Everything counts on day one, WAMC.org. It's Vox Pop. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest, and the phone lines are loaded. Let's go to Larry in Poughkeepsie. Larry, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two cats. They're 7 years old, female and male, brother and sister. I've had them since they're 6 weeks old. The male cat has never allowed anybody to pick him up or touch him except for me. When he was 2 years old, he had a hot spot. I was able to get him to the vet through some treatment. Reoccurred again when he was a year old, 3 years old. I was unable to, when I went to get him, he went for me. I couldn't get him. I went as far as contemplating trapping him in the house. I let it go. It eventually healed over 3 or 4 months. However, since then, I'm unable to bring him for regular annual exams because my thinking is I would have to literally get a trap and trap him, and I don't want to stress him out to do that for a regular exam. I take the other, his litter mate, in every year in the off chance that, you know, they would have something in common. But what do you suggest in terms of a problem like that?
So, Larry, it is a problem, and I do applaud your getting your female in every year, because when an animal gets examined every year, their quality of life usually stands to improve, because a good thorough exam by a vet will frequently turn up things that could be improved upon, things that people generally don't look at, like in the mouths or whatever, palpate their abdomen, et cetera, et cetera. And their quality of life is better as a result of having those problems looked at and taken care of. And so it's really good. But, Larry, your male, who presents such a challenge getting into the vet, is not, unfortunately, not that unusual. And a lot of cats do get stressed out and do not want to get taken to the vets. And there are several things that you could try to make it a little less stressful. Number one, If possible, you want to get a carrier that you can coax the cat into on his own. In other words, put attractive things in there, put little pieces of cheese, put little catnip toys or, you know, whatever kind of plaything he likes. You could shine your laser light in there, get him to chase it, and try to make that carrier some place which does not have all negative connotations associated with it, number one. Number two, drugs. Okay, there are anti-anxiety medications, Larry, that you could use that will not necessarily provide a sledgehammer-like sedative effect, but will at least take some of that stress off, take the edge off, so that it's not as much of a stressor for him to be put into that carrier that hopefully he's been acclimated to previously, and get him to the vet in as unstressful a way as possible. Now, a lot of cats don't like to drive either, and that anxiety medication or an anxiolytic will often help a cat who's not appreciative of the car ride to not be quite as stressed out with the car ride either. And then there are certain other little things that you could do that in some cats will have an ameliorating effect, such as there are synthetic pheromones that will sometimes make a cat feel a little less stressed, and we use those in our waiting room. There are certain aromatherapy essences, essential oils, that type of thing, that will frequently calm a cat down. There is the pet version of the rescue remedy, which is this Bach flower remedy. It's kind of a faux homeopathic type remedy that will, some cats, some animals, make them a little less stressed. And if you put all these efforts together, it might have a noticeable effect. Now, it's not that the cat, the male cat of yours, Larry, is ever going to be happy about going to the vet, but the more things you could do along those lines to get him a little less stressed out about it will be better. And I could understand many people's, not only yours, Larry's, but many cat owners stress themselves about stressing out their cats and bringing the cat to the vet. And I could also, for that matter, sympathize with all those vets that have to deal with all the stressed out cats. But I personally take it as somewhat of a challenge. You know, how do we get our job done in as least stressful and least harmful a way as possible for everyone involved? And so it's always a challenge. Cats are always a challenge. But I appreciate the effort that you put into it, Larry, and you're doing a good job as a cat.
Larry, thanks a lot for the call. It's Lee in Utica. Lee, your turn.
Hi, Doctor. My 13-year-old poodle had a mammary tumor removed 2 months ago, and she's gotten two other tumors come up in the past 2 weeks, a small and a larger one, very sensitive to the touch. We're going to take her in and see about having them removed. I'm just wondering, have you run across situations like this? Any ideas what's going on here?
Yes, I have run into situations like that, Lee. And when you see a recurrence of a mammary tumor, you're looking at going from the first procedure's lumpectomy to the second procedure's medical mastectomy. So when you do a radical mastectomy, you're taking out all the mammary glands on that one side. I don't know whether the tumor that you've seen in the last 2 weeks are
Let me correct myself now. The two tumors that are coming up are not on the mammary glands. They're on her stomach. You know, one's a quite large, like a 2-inch diameter. The other's like a 1/2-inch diameter, right next to each other.
Near where the original one was?
In the general area, but not on the mammary glands.
They may have nothing to do with it, Lee.
Okay.
You are either looking at doing a fine needle aspirate to see if there are cancerous cells in there under the microscope, or just taking them off, but not necessarily as a radical mastectomy as I had originally supposed. If they're not mammary tumors, then you don't need to do a mastectomy.
All right. Well,
try to get some information about what those new ones are, Lee, and that'll equip you to make a good rational choice how best to deal with them.
Thank you, sir.
You're Lee, welcome. Thanks Good a lot luck. For the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. The Pets and Vets Show. Ron Scharf is our guest, and we go to Margaret in Kingston. Margaret.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about our cat, whose name is Zeke. He's a 3-year-old gray tabby. Very nice personality, except he is as anxious as any animal I've ever known in my life. A noise as simple as you raise your voice to laugh will literally, he almost becomes traumatized. I mean, you can see his ears move, his body reacts. Last year, regrettably, we left him home at fireworks time. We lived down by the Rondout Creek in Kingston, and we came home. I didn't see him for 2 days. He was so traumatized by it. But any noise, he's overly sensitive to it. He jumps, he'll hide. If we operated in a monastery setting, I think he'd be perfect because he is fine when we're wandering around with him and it's very quiet. But, I mean, is there anything you can do to help him out?
Let me just ask you a couple basic questions, Margaret. Where did you get him, and how old was he when you got him?
We got him when he was about 8 weeks old. He and three litter mates had been left with a local vet, and we walked in for, I guess we were looking.
Okay.
And he was one of the four. So,
if someone's got a noise phobia, it's a little challenging to deal with, especially if they're a cat compared to a dog. But even in a dog, they're a challenge. What you want to do is, first of all, it always helps if you're there before the fireworks start or before the thunder starts or before the July 4th fireworks or whatever, so that you could take a few measures such as, it's funny, I put out a once-a-month email message to my clients, and the one that I just wrote up yesterday had to do with these thunder phobias. And I was mostly talking about... I'm sorry?
You just went through that yesterday because
yes.
We had thunder.
And that's that's why while I was writing this message out, I heard the thunder, and that's what put it into my mind to write about it because we had quite the storm yesterday. So in the message was talking about dogs, and I was saying to acclimate them to a crate or some kind of carrier that they'll, under other circumstances, get to feel comfortable in. And even with a cat, you could sometimes, as I was telling you the other caller, try to put little pieces of cheese or fun toys or catnip toys into a carrier or crate that the cat himself will go into so that the crate itself doesn't always have negative connotations as far as the cat's concerned. And then what you do, you take that crate or carrier and you put that either into an interior room or you put it into a closet or some area. Now, you don't necessarily close it because confining the cat to a small space like that, they could hurt themselves. Okay? They can get that frantic, not only cats but dogs too. But hopefully an animal that's been able to be acclimated to that carrier, and then you put some heavy blankets over the carrier so it muffles the sound. So if they're in a closet or an interior room between no windows being available, between being enclosed in this womb-like situation, they hear the sounds less, they see the lightning, if that's one of the stimuli that sets them off, less. And so you're blunting a lot of those sensory inputs that'll be setting your cat off, number one. Number two, I know that in dogs they have these thunder coats or anxiety wraps where there's these tight-fitting wraps, which some dogs will feel a little less nervous in. I'm not sure whether or not that's good for cats. I would not be surprised if the answer was no, but I would look into that. Number three is the use of medications.
He's not a very touchy-feely guy.
Okay, well, that's why I assumed not.
Yeah.
But then also anti-anxiety medication, Margaret, a benzodiazepine, an alprazolam, a Xanax kind of medication. But, of course, the trick is to be able to give it to him before the brunt of the storm or the brunt of the fireworks have come. Beyond that, I'm a little hard-pressed to think about other things that you could do. I'm sure there are many other things, Margaret. But these are visceral, emotional responses that the animal's having. So we're never going to change their mind about them. All we could do is try to manage them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Margaret,
I mean, he's a sweetheart other than that. And I have one other question.
Very quickly.
Okay. He has a dripping out of his eye. Okay. It's like a blocked tear duct. It will coat over with clearly, like the fluid can't come out. His eye will sometimes close. Now, he doesn't seem to be bothered by it, and I don't think we particularly want to have any kind of surgery. But are there drops or anything we can give him for that, or is it anything that you think could be a real problem?
No. If it is indeed a blocked tear duct, Margaret, what you could do is, first of all, clean it once or twice a day with a cotton ball. But unless it's irreversibly blocked, you can cannulate that tear duct and try to flush it out with saline and try to unblock it. So unless it's been blocked for years and years, and it's and at that point it might not be doable, you could try to flush it out.
Okay. Margaret, we got to move it along. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very, very much for your help. Thanks.
Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. Pets and Vets, you know, Ron, I don't know if you've noticed, but all the calls thus far have been about cats.
Those cats.
Which provides empirical evidence that cats are better than dogs. And we'll get into that later. Mike in
Clifton
Park.
I'll never agree with that.
Mike, you're next.
I'd catch hell.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a two-year-old cat that has a chronic bladder infection. Well, not infection, but blockage, combo of two. He's been on antibiotics for probably about 2 months.
Okay.
And
kind of a bad connection here, Mike. Can you stand, maybe just turn around a little bit?
Yeah, I'm on my cell phone, but I'll take off. I was on the speakerphone.
Oh, okay. That's better.
But right now, he's going in and out of the cat box a bunch of times. I would say probably 100 times a day.
Wow.
Exaggerating a bit, but sometimes he's squatting around and peeing on the floor. And it's just becoming, they're trying to control it under diet, but that doesn't seem to be doing much to help his problem.
Well, Mike, a few medical questions. Has a urinalysis been done to tell you what kind of crystals you're dealing with? I'm assuming that there are crystals going on.
Yes, that is correct. Urinalysis, I'm not 100% sure, but I know he had the catheter in him where they were trying to relieve some of the pressure and stuff like that.
Okay.
And they'd send him home with the antibiotics we're trying to give him, but it doesn't, it's like the brown pill, and we crush it up. It's been a big fight trying to get him to take that.
Okay. So, there are several things that can cause them to have the symptoms that you're describing, Mike. In general, we lump them under the rubric of what's called feline lower urinary tract disease, FLUTD. Now, that's a complicated thing. It's not a simple situation. It's usually not bacterial in nature, so it's usually not antibiotics that'll help, though the key word is usual. Okay, they could have a bacterial bladder infection, a UTI, in which case the antibiotics would help. And if that's the case, and if your cat has a bacterial UTI, what you need to do is get the cat off the antibiotics for a few days, Mike, so that you could do a culture and sensitivity, because that's the gold standard of how you're going to diagnose a bacterial urinary tract infection, because they don't always show up on the urinalysis. So you need, number one, a urinalysis, Mike. Number two, you need a culture and sensitivity. And number three, if he's got this refractory situation going on for a few months, I would consider an x-ray, because you want to make sure there's no stones in there. If there are actual stones visible on an x-ray or an ultrasound, then you're going to have to deal with that too. Okay? And that gets back to finding out what kind of crystals there are, because there are some diets that are more appropriate if there are stones, and there are other diets if there are, that are more appropriate if it's not yet stones. Okay? So you want to make sure of what you're dealing with, number one. Number two, is the cat, Mike, getting any dry food?
Yeah. Well, he kind of prefers the diet type of food. We try to give him the wet stuff that was in the can, but he just doesn't like eating it. So right now he's mainly on dry.
Well, is it the prescription food that he's on, Mike, or is it regular dry?
Yep, prescription.
Excellent. So in general, the guideline is that the canned food is way better. It's way more beneficial when these cats get these problems than dry food, because with the dry food, they don't get as much water. Their urine could be more concentrated, whereas the wet food, it's mostly water. Their urine is more dilute, and furthermore, the prescription diets that are made for this are made with a higher salt content to encourage more water consumption, but it's not the kind of salts that'll contribute to the possible crystals that that cat has. That's why it's so important, and I keep on coming back to the urinalysis to find out what type of crystals you're dealing with, Mike. And then if you keep at it, eventually you'll get it under control. But I doubt that he's got a problem that's going to need antibiotics for 2 months. It's very unlikely. Either you're using the wrong antibiotic, or it's not an antibiotic responsive situation at all, and it's really something else that the cat needs.
Yeah, it's like a moxicillin. But what about, is there any over-the-counter wet food that we can give them, or do you just stick with the diet stuff?
In general, any wet food, whether it's over-the-counter or the prescription, is going to be more beneficial than dry food. Just as a given, but there are some cats that do prefer dry food and won't touch the canned food. It's a minority, but it's true.
Okay.
And those cats are the ones that sometimes you have no choice. And if you have to give dry food, then that dry food really has to be the prescription dry. Now, if you can get them onto canned food, sometimes after the initial problem, after the first few weeks, an over-the-counter canned food may be good enough. You'll just have to use it, try it, see what happens, do a few checks of the urine, and do a urinalysis several times just to make sure that that over-the-counter canned food is not producing the kinds of crystals that you're trying to avoid, and that might be all you need to do eventually.
Okay, hey, thanks. Thanks for all the info.
Sure thing,
Mike. Thank you very much. It's Ron Scharf. It's his monthly appearance here on Vox Pop, Pets and Vets, and we'll get back to more of your calls in a moment at 800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from the Olana Partnership and Olana State Historic Site, presenting Olana's Dynamic Landscape, Contemporary Works by Hudson Valley Photographer Peter Aaron, in the Coachman's House, open daily through October, olana.org. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, women-owned and operated with a combined 70 years experience, eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. A.D. George Construction, for over 25 years, serving the Pioneer Valley's residential and construction needs, remodeling, additions, and more, from design to completion, 413-256-6752. SPAC, presenting the New York City Ballet, featuring Girls' Night Out, July 18th, presented by the Times Union, hair blowouts, massages, mani-pedis, spa treatments, yoga, wine, and chocolate tastings, and more. This year, GE sponsors kids. SPAC.org. Athos Restaurant, Albany, serving classic Greek cuisine, weekly specials featured on a three-course prefix menu, dinner served daily, live music every Friday night, athosrestaurant.com. And Kerry Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting historic painter impersonator Mark Beard and the late Joe Richards through July 8th, kerryhaddadgallery.com.
Well, all right, let's try to keep these cat questions going. Prove once and for all cats are better than dogs. We've had all cat questions so far, and I know Dr. Scharf is in full agreement with my assessment.
Wait a minute.
No? All right, let's go to the phones and try to keep this streak alive. Amy in Queensbury. Amy.
Hi, this is a dog question.
No! Go!
Sorry.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, well, Friday I adopted a 10-year-old Cocker Spaniel. And I took him to the vet, got all of his blood work done, got him checked over. He got a clean bill of health. He's a very healthy 10-year-old dog. However, he has moderate tartar buildup on the back of his teeth. Is it necessary to have him under anesthesia and get this scraped off? Or can it just, is it just a sign of old age?
Amy, I would say that it is necessary. Now, when people say, oh, is it essential? Well, it's only as essential, Amy, as you never having your teeth cleaned and possibly never brushing or flossing. So how would you feel in there, okay? This, Amy, happens to be my number one topic when I talk to my clients. It's the single biggest thing we could do to improve our pet's quality of life is to keep their teeth clean. And the reason I say that is because no one looks in there, and everyone who smells the breath of a cat or a dog assumes that it ought to smell stinky like that, and it shouldn't. And it only smells like that because they haven't had enough cleaning. Now, what I recommend, Amy, first of all, ideally, if you could brush your dog's teeth, that's great. Do not use regular human toothpaste. It's not made for dogs. You could use something as simple as a warm baking soda solution or more conveniently, use a toothpaste that has a chicken flavor or sometimes a fish flavor, and the animals appreciate it. Now, even if you brush their teeth every day, Amy, the perspective I give to people is us. We, humans, are brushing our teeth every day if we're good with flossing, and still recommend that we have our teeth cleaned twice a year by the hygienist. Now, most dogs do not get their teeth cleaned every day, or brushed rather, but even if they did, I would be still, and I'm not the only one, recommending that ideally they have their teeth cleaned or perform what's called a dental prophylaxis once a year. Now, it's not only good for the good comfort of the dog and the dog's quality of life to get all that crud off, but it also serves to give the vet a chance to do a thorough exam with them in a chemically cooperative frame of mind, in other words, asleep, so that we could tell if there's any rotten teeth in there that could not be seen during the physical exam on an awake dog. A lot of them are scared or threatened to have someone pry their mouth open and look in there. And it's sometimes tough to tell whether or not there's extensive periodontal disease. By periodontal disease, I mean not only gum reception, but also recession of the bone. The alveolar bone itself and the periodontal ligament itself can get rotted away. That causes loose, rotten teeth. It's a great, great detractor from the animal's quality of life. And I totally think that it's worth it on a 10-year-old Cocker, Amy, to have that done. Now, if it was a 10-year-old Irish Wolfhound, I would say differently, because that is much older for an Irish Wolfhound, and at that age, I do not think it's worth it unless they are having something in their mouth which is actually preventing them from getting the food in and interfering with their nutrition. Otherwise, I would not do it on a very, very geriatric dog that's otherwise having no problem eating. So a 10-year-old for a Cocker is not that old, and yes, Amy, I would do it.
Thank you, Amy, very much. I appreciate it. Let's go to Debbie in Sheffield. Debbie. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Debbie.
Hi. I just had a comment about the Thunder, and I've had four golden retrievers, and they're all purebreds and bought them, you know, after the, you know, puppies. And one experience was when we lived in Richfield, Connecticut, I had to go to the dentist, and then there was this huge storm. I came home, and there was no Boris. And so we were so upset. Went around for, you know, all day trying to find him. And then later in the day, I got a message on my answering machine, and it said, I have your dog, but he won't come out of the closet. So that was, and I called it back. But sure enough, it was my dog.
That's what you call frantic.
And my experience with all four dogs was that anytime there was a thunderstorm, they just were so scared. And I don't know if somebody told me this, but they said, you know, it was like a survival thing with dogs, because, you know, if something terrible happened, they have to go protect themselves, you know.
Well, Debbie, but I don't think, I would have to disagree with you. First of all, I don't think it's...
Don't mind that.
Well, I don't think it's a survival thing, because it's not true of all dogs. It's only a minority of dogs that hunt, that have a thunder phobia. I have a golden retriever, and I could take her out in the middle of a storm, and it doesn't faze her. She just does her business. So it's not the case that all dogs have it. It's not the case that all golden retrievers have it, Debbie. I'm sorry that your track record with your four goldens has been it, but it's a phobia. It's not a survival mechanism. It's a phobia, and they respond in a totally fight or flight way that's out of proportion to the severity of the situation. And so, being that it's a phobia, Debbie, there are some things that could be done.
Add in their babyhood.
What was that? We missed that. Say it again.
Is it because of some experience that they had that it makes it a phobia.
We can only assume that that's true. I assume that that's the case, but it's often the case that people never saw that first episode. They don't know why that dog got it into their heads that they should freak out at the sound of thunder or a firework. So, you know, I had a dog that I adopted that had been an abandoned dog in New York City. And this little, I think she was a five-week-old or a six-week-old dog, was tied to a fence in Riverside Park. And I was a young guy then, and I was this happy-go-lucky guy that decided to take a look at the July 4th fireworks on the Hudson River and stupidly brought my dog. That's when she got a thunder phobia or a noise phobia, and it dated from that time that I took this small puppy, and I'm embarrassed to even admit it, but that was a case in which there was an initial time that
one
caused it.
One of those retrievers actually was shipped to us from California to Colorado, and so we suspected something from probably the engine.
Jet engine.
That's possible.
Debbie, we got to move it along, but thank you very much.
Thanks,
Let's go
Debbie.
To Ed in Lake Katrine. Ed.
Hi. In our household, we've had cats rule and dogs rule, and now dogs rule.
Okay.
We love both.
Fair enough.
So, we have Great Pyrenees, and we have a pit bull, and we have 13 acres of woods around our house. We also have a lot of deer moving through, and we have a lot of ticks. I understand that ticks can pass along not just Lyme disease, but there are other diseases, and our Pyrenees limps along, his right shoulder is bothering him, and the vets, we like our vets, and they say maybe arthritis, but I'm wondering if could also be Lyme disease or some other disease passed along by ticks, and we have pulled ticks off of him lately.
So the answer is yes, but it's an easy thing to find out. There are two ways that you could find it out. You could either give the Great Pyrenees an empirical course of antibiotics, and the most common antibiotic that most vets use is doxycycline. So it's a generic pill. It's one that, even though Great Pyrenees are pretty big dogs, it won't be nearly as expensive as one of these trademark or proprietary medications. And just give an empirical course of it and see what happens the other way. And the way that I personally prefer doing it is by doing a blood test that's called a C6 quantitative. And if that number is over a certain amount, the cutoff is 30. If it's over 30, I put a lot of my patients on the medication, even if they don't have the symptoms. And some of them will end up getting better in a way that the owners thought, I just thought he was getting older or something. But I will say, Ed, I don't know how old your Great Pyrenees is, but the more common presentation for Lyme is to have what's called a shifting leg lameness. In other words, it'll be one leg that the animal's favoring one day, and then 5 days later, it'll be a different leg. So that's the kind of thing that if you take an X-ray, it will not show up on an X-ray. Okay, and it will not respond to an anti-inflammatory, but it will respond to the doxycycline. So a third way would be to put them onto an anti-inflammatory, and if it gets a little better, it argues against it being Lyme, and if it does get better, it argues in favor of it being the arthritis or degenerative joint disease.
But there are other diseases as Lyme.
A million others. There's the common test that most vets do, Ed, in this part of the country for heartworm. We'll also test for Lyme and two other tick-borne diseases, Ehrlichia and Anaplasma. So there are some others. Now, they're not testing for Rocky Mountain spotted fever or certain
other.
Could
that affect a dog?
Rocky Mountain spotted fever can affect a dog, but it's not as common in this part of the country as its name implies. But I've seen it. I've had it in animals that have not been to the Rockies. So there are plenty of other tick-borne diseases that 4DX, heartworm, Lyme, and the other two tick-borne disease tests that I mentioned will tell you about the most common, but there are others as well.
Ed, we're going to move it along here, try to get a couple of more calls in before the end of the program. Let's go to Rory in Albany. Rory, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking the call. I have a nine-year-old American Eskimo who has developed a flattish fatty tumor on one side of his torso and is starting to grow another on the other side. I forget the technical name for these.
Lipoma?
Yep. And the vet has said as long as they don't interfere in any way with the dog's activity, they usually don't do anything about them. But I have seen older dogs walking around with these huge lumps hanging off of them, and the owners have said, well, now my dog is too old.
Right. That's,
to have something done about it.
Okay, it's a quandary, okay, Rory? And I've been through this, and I've approached it from both aggressive and conservative approaches. And I'll tell you the way that I look at it now. This 9-year-old that your Eskimo is, what you do is a lot of times they come in for their physical exam. You see a 1-inch or a 2-inch bump. Maybe you stick a needle into it. You do a fine needle aspirate. You ascertain that it is lipoma. Fine. You have a diagnosis. You know what you're dealing with. You say, okay, let's take a look at it next year's physical exam. So next year's physical exam, you look at it. Now, you don't realize it's grown because you're living with the dog all the time and it's gradual. But you take a ruler to it or, you know, if you, you know, you look at your fingers spread apart, your index from your thumb, and you, as a vet, you say, oh, I know that that's 2 inches now. It's 25% bigger. And you say, well, now the dog's 10 years old and hasn't grown that much. Maybe we just look at it next year. So you look at it next year, and now it's 2.5, 3 inches. And the dog is 11 years old, and you start to think, oh, it is getting bigger, but the dog is getting older. I don't know if we should touch it. And then before you know it, the thing is massive, and you wish that you had done something about it when it was 9.
Right.
So the way that I'm doing it, Rory, is first of all, if it's in a sensitive area, and I'm talking something like an armpit or a groin, because that could interfere with its gait. Okay.
Right.
I'll be more aggressive at that point if it's in an armpit or what we call the axilla or the groin, number one. Number two, if it's showing growth from 1 year to the next, and you don't have to wait a year, you could recheck it in 6 months too. Okay.
Yep.
Then that's an indication for considering getting it out, because I'll tell you, these lipomas are really easy to get out. You don't even have to dissect all around them. All you have to do is make an incision and peel them out. Okay? So it's much easier to do a 2-inch incision when the dog is 9 or 10 than to do a 5-inch incision when he's 10 or 11 or 12.
Got it.
Okay?
Got it.
So if it's growing, even if it's not in a sensitive area, I would take it out, because it's true. Just like you said, you see these dogs walking around. I once had to take a volleyball-sized lipoma out of the side of a Doberman Pinscher, and that incision was massive. So, better sooner than later.
All right, Rory, we're going to move it along, but thank you. And let's get one more call in here. Melody in Brant Lake. Melody, we have about 2 minutes here.
Okay, quick question. I have a cat. She's about 2 or 3 years old. I got her last year. She lives mostly outside. And over the last couple of weeks, she's taken to racing uncontrollably around the outside of my house and leaping on my window screens for no apparent reason.
Well, there's a reason. It's just not apparent. Unless,
yeah, well, that's
because the likelihood... The likelihood, Melody, the cat's got a screw loose is very, very small. Okay, it's very unlikely, very unlikely that there's some structural or chemical brain lesion going on, but rather...
Yeah, literally over the last month, she's just started doing it.
There's someone out there that's driving your cat batty. There's a prey. There's another cat. There's some other animate object out there that's driving your cat crazy, and I don't know if it's a mole or a vole or a bat. I don't know what it is, but there's something that your cat's seeing, I don't know what to do about that. Maybe have a heart trap or you know, smaller than your cat size, because I assume it's an animal smaller than your cat size.
Well, she doesn't seem to have a problem dropping off chipmunks in front of my doorstep. So
it's that chipmunk that's getting away that's driving her crazy.
That one very smart
one she
chipmunk.
Can't get.
That's right.
Yeah. Huh?
It's the one that's getting away that's driving her crazy, not the one she's getting.
Apparently.
Yeah, she feels like she's got a job to do, and it drives her nuts that she can't get her job accomplished.
What kind of cat do you have?
It's a calico, short hair.
Okay. I had a Siamese that would do the same thing, but she was just crazy anyway.
I find that cats take after their owners, Ray.
Oh, now that was a shot. Oh, Rod Sharp. It's his last appearance here on Fox Pop. How about that, Melody? You're his last caller.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well done. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Hopefully we hear from you during the fun drive. And thanks to everybody who called in. This is what, the second to last fun Vox Pop before the fun drive. It kicks off on Monday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. We drag ourselves in here. If you want to end the fun drive early, I suggest you give a call, or better yet, go to the website and make a secure online pledge, wamc.org. We are just about out of time. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Dr. Ron Scharf, who, as always, did a great job. Support comes from the Berkshire's visitors. Oh, let me put the glasses on. I am ancient. Here we go. Ah, that's better. So, the support comes from the Berkshire Visitors Bureau and One Berkshire Foundation, presenting the Berkshire's Online Dream Auction now through June 4th. Over 200 items in the Berkshires and beyond. Berkshires.org. Chez Albert, Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring dishes inspired by French country cooking and introducing a new and expanded location at 178 North Pleasant Street, chezalbert.net for menu. A New York State tobacco-free community partners working to help parents prevent and reduce youth smoking with prevention programs to counter tobacco marketing and help save lives. New York State tobacco-free community partners at smokefreecapital.org. And Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing nature gifts, bird seed, bird feeders, and more to help create a backyard refuge, wbu.com/Saratoga Springs. That's it for Vox Pop today. I'll tell you one thing. Tomorrow, Gordon Fricke will be here and will answer your car questions. Thanks again for joining us. Our engineer today, Zachary T. Malloy. Your calls answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer, Patrick Donges. I am Ray Graff. I'll see you tomorrow for the Cars Show.